What's up, everyone, and welcome back. You are back with District Baseball once again as we are recapping a kind of good, actually, national season as they eclipse 70 wins on the year and win a series against the best team in baseball. But before we get to that, Trey, what's going on?
Well, Nick, the season has officially ended, and I've just kind of been reflecting over the past, three or so hours since the game ended. And basically, you pretty much said it all. It was like good, but bad, but also good. So I think overall the team did better than expected, and that's the most important part. And we have a lot to talk about in terms of those players as well. And we're going to start by just kind of going through each position group as well as the coaching. And giving our thoughts, maybe some player grades, maybe some full position grades. So, Nick, who did you want to talk about first?
I think it's logical to start with CJ Abrams, but just for the sake of this, you know, kind of segment and making sure we don't talk about everyone for an hour, which we easily could, we'll just kind of include all of the infielders and catchers in this argument. Not an argument. No need to argue anymore. The season's over. In this discussion, CJ has to be the big story of the season in my mind. I think he came in with the most to prove. I think you could argue Josiah definitely did. But I think even last year, through all of his struggles, we saw the potential for Josiah to like take that next step. Whereas CJ, because he was so young, because he spent so little time in the minors, we didn't know what the logical place to start with him was. And it was a rough start. It was a really, really rough start. But man, once they kind of just let him play, you can't argue with the results. Is he going to be a top five shortstop? I don't know. Maybe not. But if that's our shortstop, I am perfectly fine with it. Like the season he had is one that you're just so comfortable about. And like hearing you talk about the season and, you know, just gathering my thoughts as we were getting ready to do this episode, it feels so weird to feel so like accomplished on the season about your team and still feel so unsettled about their future. Like we're 16 games better this year than we were last year. And it still feels like there's so much that needs to be answered. But then you look at shortstop, that's no longer a question. Like CJ Abrams is the national shortstop. And that's such a good feeling. Obviously, everyone knows the torrid stretch he went on after being put in the leadoff spot. He set the Nationals single season steal mark, of course, on the final day, the very last chance
so awesome.
In that game that he got in the seventh or eighth inning or whatever it was to get to stolen base number 47, breaking Trey Turner's mark, and really cementing himself as a guy. There's stuff we need to see out of him, but he's 23. I'm not worried. You're doing stuff like this at 22 years old. I will give you plenty of patience and divert my impatientness elsewhere to other positions around the diamond. CJ Abrams is the big shining star for me, and I don't think that's a surprise. The other position I really think is going to be a huge topic of discussion in the winter is the catching position. Like, yeah, we know Keibert Ruiz is around for the long haul, and I'm still a believer in him, even though he kind of disappointed for most of the year, I think it's safe to say, particularly defensively. But he's still young. I imagine he will continue to improve. Riley Adams emerged as a serviceable backup. But then Drew Midlus came out of nowhere and also emerged as a serviceable backup. So all of a sudden the Nats have like three startable catchers. And for a while we didn't have one. And Riley Adams has his hamate injury, so that's going to be something to watch. He's not the best defensively, so could a position shift be in his future? We'll see. But I think Drew Millis deserves a spot on next year's roster because he's the best defensive catcher out of the three of them, and that's what you want out of a backup catcher. So it's a really interesting conversation. We can dive into the numbers here in a little bit, but catching or sorry, catcher and shortstop being answered effectively is a huge step in the right direction for this team.
Yeah, I think this infield unit as a whole was probably one of the better units, especially if you add in Jamer Candelario his first half. As for Ruiz, I think that overall he was kind of disappointing in terms of like a grade. If we wanted to give him a grade, it would be probably like a D plus or something because his defense was not plus, it was minus.
It was
And
bad, if we're being honest.
it was actually disgusting. Honestly, it made me
D
upset.
for disgusting.
D for disgusting. And it seemed to be them trying to fix certain parts of his defense from last year actually ended up just ruining his entire defensive ability. Like he was a good blocker of the baseball last year, and this year he's one of the worst. He was not a good framer last year, and I think what they tried to do with him was put him on one knee and start picking those bottom the pitches off the bottom off the knees, and start improving his framing. It actually just made him worse. So none of that really seemed to do anything good. So I'm curious what their approach is going to be this offseason. Luckily, his bat kind of came through in the second half, and there were stretches where he showed that he could be an elite hitter at the catcher position. It's just trying to extrapolate that over the whole season. And it's generally when he's more patient is when he is a better hitter. And he can stay aggressive on pitches in the zone. It's those pitches just like on the corner, just off the corner, where he started kind of swinging at those in September again, but then, sort of evened it out. So, in terms of the bat, I was actually happy with him in the second half, but the defense is going to have to be addressed. Because, yeah, like you said, Drew Millis is cl clearly the better defender right now. And then Riley Adams has the bat. So, it is good to have options, though, I will say. It's somewhat answered, like you said, in terms of we know that one of those three guys is going to be, the starter. It's probably going to be Ruiz, because they've extended him to the 8-year deal, obviously. But then it's like who's going to back up? Probably Millis at the beginning of the season if the hamate injury for Adams isn't healed yet. But yeah, and then you kind of go around the diamond again, and it's like, well, first base and second base are sort of up in the air.
Huge questions. The
Yeah,
biggest questions of
absolutely.
the offseason in my mind is that right
Absolutely.
side of the infield.
Yeah, and that's maybe where you'd like to see potential free agent acquisition. I know Rhys Hoskins has been floated as a corner bat over there at first base. I would say first base is a spot where you do want to try and pick somebody up who can give you a 30 home run season because that is definitely something that the Nats need. They need the home run ball. Joey Meneses, a lot of doubles this year. He had like what, 13 homers, I think. Dom
Yeah, I
Smith
believe
had
that's
like
what he finished with.
12. So even combining both of those, that's still not 30. So they're gonna have to probably drop Meneses. I think Dom Smith's gonna get picked up because he's an arb still. So might be the end of Joey time. The only thing really saving him is the fact that he hits so well with runners in scoring position.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. Like with Joey in particular, I think he like if we're just grading Joey, B plus B, I'm cool with that kind of grade. It's not an A because the power wasn't there that we hoped would carry over, but he was clutch a lot during the year. But hitting with runners in scoring position is not exactly a sticky stat. Like that's not exactly something you can depend upon year after year. In some cases you can, like with obviously the greats, but I just don't know if Joey's going to be able to replicate that. If he can, great, but I just that's a scary bet to try to make, but I guess it won't cost the Nats too much financially. But who would they
That's a good
miss out
point.
on in free agency if they believe Joey can do it again? How many times have the Nats like re-sign someone or brought someone back thinking they can like create that magic again, and then it just doesn't work. Like that's my worry. Like, has Joey earned more time? Sure, probably. But again, like, if he can't, because hitting with runners in scoring position is not exactly a sticky stat, then I worry about what they might have missed out on in free agency, and then it's too late, and then we're just kind of stuck with a revolving door at first base again.
Yeah, and then you go to second base, and it's kind of
Who
also
the hell
maybe even more
knows?
of a question mark.
Yeah.
I would think Luis Garcia has at least earned a chance again after his great September at the plate, and honestly, in the field, he was really good as well. But that's not a guarantee if he can do it. It's just like it wasn't a guarantee this year when we put him over there. But the free agent infield market is probably stronger in 2025.
Yeah.
So I would say you could look at maybe the corner bat, but for the up the middle, probably not till 25, if that's what they wanted to look at. But yeah, I mean, I think overall the infield unit was solid, and then third base also could be a place where you maybe see another 1 year deal similar to how they did Candelario this year, because I don't think Brady House is ready to start next year, but I do think potentially by the end of the year he'll be
I think
ready.
he's a September call-up. I think he'll be the last of that trio, position player trio with Wood, Cruz, and House. I think he'll be the last to make the majors. Not that he'll be the worst by any means. I just think he will take the most time to develop. And I don't think we'll see him until late next year, if not until 2025.
Yeah, I think he will end up coming up late next year, but they will need a stopgap for 2024. So probably go out and sign a cheaper option for that position, and then hope you can flip him again, similar to how
You're
it worked
telling
out for
me
Candelario.
Ildemar Vargas, the recently re-signed, extended Ildemar Vargas, isn't your third baseman of the future?
No, he's not. If he's signed as just a utility man, however, I am perfectly okay with it. I'm just worried that they won't sign another guy because they signed Vargas. So
He's gonna be a key piece in the bullpen next year too. That dude plays everywhere because Davey loves him so much.
Yeah, I mean, I like his versatility as a utility guy, but I can't watch him play every day. He's not good enough. It's just that simple.
True.
So, but yeah, an ideal situation where he's just the utility guy, totally fine with that.
Yep. I echo your thoughts though. Like overall, I'm pleased with the infield. There's some great spots, but
Especially versus expectations. I mean,
yeah. I
that's
mean,
basically the whole thing
if we're
here.
doing everything versus expectations, like every position was great. Like that
Pretty
we're going to
much, yeah.
talk about, or positional group was great. But obviously that's. Versus expectation, like if we're talking about versus the
Competing
rest of
for
the
a playoff
MLB,
spot, yeah.
then obviously there's a lot of work to do, and obviously that's what we want to do is compete with the rest of the league. But yeah, I think the infield was one of our stronger groups, if not the strongest of positional group. I think B minus somewhere in there, like
Yeah.
collectively, and that includes, like you said, Jamer Candelario's first half of the season, which was excellent. That also includes CJ's first half of the year, which was not so great. Even though my lasting impression of CJ's season was great, like it still includes the rough first half. So as a whole, I think somewhere B, if you're going on the numeric scale, 84, somewhere something like that.
We'll go with that. That
Yeah.
works for me too.
Yeah. One thing I will say, because we haven't talked about him, and I know he has his cult following. Dom Smith, listen, like he hit 12 more home runs than expected because he was expected to hit 0 home runs because that's what he did last year. If you look at the stats though, he 9 of those 12 home runs came in low leverage situations. Low leverage meaning like when the score was completely out of hand one way or another, when the Nats were either up really big or down really big. He's not a middle of the order bat, no matter how hard they try. His numbers in high leverage situations, meaning when the game's on the line or there's runners on base or anything like that, are terrible. Just terrible. He was great defensively. I love that. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to discount that. But first base is a position you need power. And if there is a an opportunity to upgrade the position this offseason, whether it be free agency or trade, the Nationals need to do it, because even in the minor leagues, you do not have a clear answer at the position. You're hoping, you know, or maybe looking to a prospect to make a positional switch to first base, which is a very viable option in some cases, but that's not, you know, a solution just yet. You have to see if they are able to like make the major leagues, let alone switch positions, you know? So in my mind, if there's a position or an opportunity to upgrade this offseason, you have to do it at first base. Don Smith, fine, but that fine is not going to get us anywhere.
Yeah, I think both corners are probably free agent spots, one of which would maybe be a slight, maybe a longer term deal if there is one. Not like a super long term
deal,
like
a two, but like if they give a 2 year deal to CJ Cron, I'm cool with that. You know?
Maybe not Cron.
Okay.
I give him a one.
But I'm just like example.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe not one two, I'd not a 2 year deal. I'm just talking like profile wise.
Yeah. Yeah. You're absolutely right, though, about the organization. That's not their strong point right now in the farm is definitely not first base or even third base. I mean, they have house, but
yeah,
it's mostly outfielders, which we will get to right now. How about that? Let's go ahead and move on to the outfield.
Great segue, because, buddy. Great
segue. Yeah,
swing.
Thank you. Segway. I appreciate that. Thank you, everybody. I appreciate that. Anyways, so yeah, the outfield, interesting group. It's kind of like either you have like some pretty good players who overperformed, or you have just like, I don't know. So it's kind of, it's like you got like the group with Garrett and Thomas, and even you could even include the first 60 games of Victor Robles in there, and then you also have like Blake Rutherford and
Travis
Eric
Blankenhorn,
Hill,
Derek
Travis
Hill, Alex
yeah.
Call,
huge Damn. Cluster of guys. And then yeah, I mean Jacob Young is at least cool, but yeah, so overall just kind of a weird group. Not necessarily bad, because I think Lane and Stone kind of elevate that, because they were getting more of the plate appearances towards the end of the season. Lane, obviously, the entire season. But then you kind of remember Corey Dickerson was here.
Oh, my God.
And it's like, oh,
I forgot.
No.
I
he
truly
drags
forgot.
The whole thing down.
Oh, boy.
So this is actually kind of tough to grade, because Dickerson's not here anymore, but he was. So I think
we have to include it.
We have to accommodate for that. So,
yeah.
But yeah, you know, Lane and Stone, Garrett, at least were bright spots. And, this team needs Stone Garrett. I mean, we've already mentioned the record, that we find kind of interesting, where Stone was seemed to be a big catalyst for us winning. He had power, which a lot of our players do not have. So be interesting to get him back. I don't think this is an area where free agency is necessary as much, because we have guys in the farm that will probably be either coming up at some point, like James Wood, I would imagine will come up at some point next year or in 2025, like with Cruz potentially and other guys. So this is kind of a wait and see. You got to figure out center field. Who's going to play there for 2024? It might be Jacob Young. Could be a potential 1 year deal, but I would think it would probably be an in-house option there.
Yeah. For the outfield, I'll reverse my order this time and I'll start with my grade. I think I'm in the C plus range, 77.5 on the grading scale. Not a believer in Lane Thomas. I'll admit that now. I think everyone who knows me knows that. He had a good year. Like, I'm not trying to discredit that. My whole Lane Thomas opinion is really just pushing back against the idea that he's a long-term solution in any regard. He's a fourth outfielder at best. Like, I'm sorry. He just is. He is a starting outfield on a non-competitive rebuilding team. So I'm fine with him starting. I'm not calling for his job. I'm saying I don't want to give him a job past 2025, you know, and probably not past 2024 with kind of the way things are trending with our fast rising production in the minors and the inevitable regression towards the mean. But his mean is still fine. Like, his mean is a fourth outfielder, and that's fine. Like, again, I know I'm beating a dead horse here a little bit, but he's fine. But he had a good year, and 28 home runs in a lineup that desperately lacks power is a godsend, you know, especially from a position or a player you didn't expect to get it, you know? So I'm cool with that. But man, he is doing a lot of work to lift up this position group. Stone Garrett is doing a lot of work to lift up the position group too, but he's Atlas and he can handle, you know, the weight of the world on his back with those shoulders. Are you kidding me? But you like what I did there?
Absolutely. Love it.
And I'm a huge Stone Garrett fan, but again, I've always been realistic about what his profile provides to a team, and that's a fourth outfielder, bench bat, spot starter that can provide some pop. And again, very valuable. And again, on a rebuilding team, he's a starting outfielder. So both those guys I want back it, next year, at least to start the year, until someone, presumably, you know, Wood or Cruz proves they are ready to take over. And then once that time comes, guess what? Thomas and Garrett, you're pushed to the side if you know they're if we need to make room for them. You know, that's just how it needs to go. But for the time being, they're fine. Other than that, though, I'm not really loving anything else. Yeah, if you want to include Victor Robles, I like, yeah, he got hurt in June, but he cooled off a lot there towards the end. If you want to really hang your hat on April and May, Victor Robles, sure. A lot of it was kind of BABIP luck and, you know, just a lot of singles. And hey, that's kind of what the Nats did this year. So that's fine. I've never been high on Victor Robles. And I think, quite honestly, the past couple of years, the Nats haven't been high on Victor Robles, and understandably so. And with the way they handled his arbitration last year and it kind of getting nasty, and then it was a weird like 2 year or 1 year deal with a team option. I think we probably saw this, the end of Victor Robles. So in my mind, I don't need to put too much stock into his early year because I don't think the Nats are either. I think they're going to move on from Victor Robles in the offseason. His the biggest argument for keeping him around was his defense, which at times was like elite, best in the league center field. We have seen options with guys who play really, really plus defense in center field now and have more on the way. So it's like, I think we've seen what we need to see out of Victor Robles. So I'm not really putting too much stock into his early season performance. And I think the injury, while, you know, poor timing for him and probably for the team as well, I think just gave a guy like Jacob Young an opportunity to get a chance, and he showed at least defensively he can be that guy in center field, and he rose through the league or through the minors to the major leagues so quickly that yeah, he's probably going to need a little bit more seasoning, and I expect him to be better next year. Will he be the center fielder of future? Probably not, but I think he's going to be a great fourth outfielder for this team. But notice how everyone is a fourth outfielder right now, like that. And that's my point is right now they're all starters. And, you know, I like certain aspects to each of their games, but none of them are the answer. So C plus is kind of where I'm at.
I mean, I'm with you there. I'm gonna give him a D plus just because Corey Dickerson dragged the entire group down. But also Derek Hill and also Blake Rutherford, because
They were nice stories for.
it was cool stories.
Couple days.
They were not just bad at the plate, but like actually unplayable. I mean, I don't even understand how Corey Dickerson got as many plate appearances as he did. But I think everything you said is valid. It's about like those guys will be good depth eventually when we have our actual starting outfield. But right now, they're not necessarily depth because our outfield isn't ready. So it's just that simple. And yeah, I think it'll be Lane and Stone to be there at the start of next season. And then again, Lane Thomas will probably be a name coming up at the trade deadline. If he's playing well again, that would be something they might consider because yeah, we got all these fourth outfielders, but we need room for our actual guys to come up. So they will be coming up next year and the year after that. And even past that. But yeah, so I think D plus is kind of harsh, but I'm just doing it for the jokes. for the Corey Dickerson joke. But
I appreciate it. Well, listen, the outfield was bad. Like, if we're being sincere about it, excuse me. Please cut that.
I'm definitely not cutting that.
The outfield was bad. Like, if we're being sincere about it, it wasn't anything to write home about. And, you know, especially after the Stone Garrett injury, man, it was rough. It was rough. Like, Jacob Young had a hot start, but he cooled off mightily. And I just talked about how I expect him to be fine next year. But Lane Thomas is doing a lot of work. And if you look at, look at Lane Thomas, like, with your eyes squinched, looks good. But if you really look at Lane Thomas's numbers, you're like, oof.
Right. Yeah, there's some danger under
that
the
screams
hood.
Outlier. Yeah. Yeah, that screams outlier to me. So
he doesn't walk. Nobody walks. Okay.
Save it. Save it.
Okay.
We're getting there.
Gosh, I have such an issue with this team's batting approach.
All right. Let's move on to the pitching, and we'll start with the starters. So having pitcher bias myself, having, you know, been a pitcher all my playing career and, you know, that being my focus as a coach, like, it was better.
That sigh.
It was better, but it wasn't good.
Yeah, it's better than awful, so.
Right. So if the bar is the floor, sure, we exceeded the bar.
The bar was definitely the floor. The bar was under the floor.
Yeah. And part of it's probably personnel, sure. Like, you talk about the, you know, the hitting approach, the pitching approach is awful too.
You can call him out. It's okay.
Listen.
Say his name.
Jim Hickey is so terrible. And the fact that I had someone reply to me saying, Jim Hickey was the Rays pitching coach for 11 years and da-da-da-da-da, he's clearly not the problem. If you look at it, the Rays got significantly better at pitching once he left. And, like, yeah, he went from the Rays to the Cubs. And then after the Cubs fired Joe Maddon, like, he was out of baseball for 3 years. And then,
yeah, I've had Cubs fans actually tell me, like, wait, that's your pitching coach? I'm so sorry.
Right. And, like, I think most fan bases hate their pitching and hitting coaches. I think that's just, like, the way it goes. I can concede that. But Jim Hickey is, like objectionably awful. Like, you have players and former players now, if you saw the Star on Doodle clip, who are trying to do their best to, like, stay professional regarding everything. But they're basically saying Jim Hickey, like, is so old school, it's painful. Like, he doesn't care about any of the new numbers and stats and analytics and just techniques and methods to help improve. Like, he's you know, pound the strike zone kind of guy. And it's just like, okay, we're getting hit hard because we're pounding the strike zone.
Yeah, like, just throw strikes.
Yeah, well, yeah, just throw strikes. You're all around it, kid. Like, what? Like, it's just so frustrating. But, like, the one thing I can say about the starting group or starting pitching group is they stayed healthy and they ate innings, and I'm cool with that. Like, you know, we'll talk about the bullpen here in a minute, but, like, they let the bullpen be pretty freaking good, if we're being honest, for most of the year, because they were able to go at least five innings of the majority of the time, which they weren't able to do last year. Last year, we had 16 or 17 different guys start games. I think this year we were at six or seven through, like, mid-August, and then guys hit the IL and got tired. And then you saw Rutledge and some other guys, you know, make spot starts or, you know, get opportunities later on in the year. And Yoan Adon came up and, you know, got a spot in the rotation to finish the year and whatnot. But, like, we were still in single digits for guys who started a game for the Nationals. And that's an accomplishment to do over a full length MLB season. We were obviously first in fewest pitchers to start a game in the year. And I think we finished top three. I haven't looked at the final numbers, but, like, that's an accomplishment. So I guess that deserves some credit, but, you know, Patrick Corbin still stunk. He was just able to not let his bad starts pile up. Like, he would throw a good start in there every now and then. CRA still above five. Like, Mackenzie Gore, lots of promise, lots of potential. I'm afraid Jim Hickey's not going to do what needs to be done. Josiah Gray, 3.91 ERA. You best believe I'm pushing that narrative. Still have very, very large concerns about what his outlook looks like. And you know, Jake Irvin came up super solid, like really impressed with him, and very viable fifth starter, especially on a team of the Nats, you know, competitive level. Could he absolutely regress and be terrible next year? Yeah, I see that world. You know, Jackson Rutledge, who knows? It's too soon to tell. And then Trevor Williams, it's almost like he was a starter. And then teams are like, hey, you're really bad at this. Let's try to make you a reliever. And they found out, hey, you're really good at this. And then the Nats came in and said, hey, we're smarter than 30, or sorry, I keep thinking there's 32 MLB teams. We're smarter
Soon.
than 29 other MLB teams. We're going to make you a starter again, and expected like different results. And he had an awful season. Awful season. So the fact that he didn't get moved to the bullpen once is just mind-boggling to me, because he didn't even eat innings. Like, he's the exception to everything I just said. He never ate innings. Like, it's so as a whole, I think I'm like a D.
Yeah.
Like, I super excited for Josiah Gray for sure, but the you know advanced analytics aren't, or you know advanced stats aren't kind to him, and I can kind of see why. He had a lot of bend but don't break throughout the year. All-star year, yeah, but a lot of bend but don't break. Better ERA than Spencer Strider, though. Right? Did I get
I
that?
think
Did
Strider
Strider
ended
pass
up
him?
just a little bit.
Damn it!
I know. It's a bummer. But they were right there, and one of those
Damn it.
apparently a Cy Young candidate.
Yeah, I know.
So.
Anyways, so yeah, I'm repeating myself at this point. I'm at a D. It needs a major boost, but I don't even think it's like I would like them to sign an arm, whether it be this year or next year, for sure. But I don't even think it's like a lack of talent like it was last year. I just think they don't have the support from coaching or whatever to. It could be run support too. Like, run support makes pitchers' jobs a lot easier, and they didn't get a lot of that, especially early in the year. So, like, there's a lot of different factors that are in play here. But I'm still not overly impressed with the starting pitching performance.
Yeah, the Nationals have a 5 ERA, which is better than like the Rockies and A's. So
And the
that's
Rockies
not
playing
good. The
Coors,
Rockies
so
playing
it's like,
Coors, so they basically don't even count. In terms of F4, actually, the Nats are 29th in terms of that stat, and the A's are 30th. But yeah, I think what you said is true. It wasn't really the talent, it was more the pitching coach. And yeah, it's interesting you give a I would give them also a D, as in get your ass to driveline, because like seriously, I don't go to an outside pitching lab and learn there, because
yeah,
Hickey ain't it.
driveline,
We'll
trade
just
athletics, something,
yeah a
please.
anything, because I don't care where you are in your rebuild or anything. 29th in pitching F4 ain't cutting it. I don't care. We gotta get better than that. It just has to be a fact. And I think we saw a lot of like I've been saying, we need to find an ace, because we have a lot of guys like Irvin, like maybe Rutledge, maybe Gray. Gore could be an ace, but like that's just he has the potential, but we know that they're probably not going to realize it. So somehow you got to get an ace, and then if you have an ace, all of a sudden it looks a little bit better, because now those guys get pushed back and they don't have to be the guy.
Right.
And they can kind of do the same thing, but on a in a different role. So it would make a lot more sense.
Yeah.
Bullpen wasn't much better. I mean, you said they were good for about the first half. And even then, it's
I think the
mostly
key components of the bullpen were good for the majority of the year,
that's what I was
though.
going to say. Even then, it's the top guys that were good. It's the bullpen, especially, is the depth cavern where there is none. Like, it's Kyle Finnegan, Hunter Harvey, and then, like, I don't know,
It
maybe Jordan
was Mason
Weems.
Thompson, but
And
then
then
they
they
ruined
broke
him.
him.
But like, even Machado looked good for a little bit, but then Like
Yeah,
they
it's
kind of broke him too, trying to make him like a 2-inning reliever every single time out.
yeah, it's it was pretty poor bullpen management combined with not that much talent to I mean, I thought they were going to be good, but then it kind of fell apart because some of the veteran guys didn't repeat their success from last year, like Erasmo. But
Shocker.
yeah, I know. Anyways, I liked the eraser. I was hoping he would do well. But
Erasing him from my mind.
yeah, so overall group wasn't particularly good, especially in the second half. They were probably worse than Oakland in the second
They were
half.
bad in the second half.
Yeah, it was
And
especially September.
I think that just, sorry, I don't mean to cut you off. Go
Yeah,
ahead.
no problem. Yeah, September was a rough month all around, but especially for the bullpen and the starters. I mean, they were fighting from behind every game, and then the bullpen would just kind of get taxed because you wouldn't have starters getting as deep into games.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's going to be depth. Got to find consistent guys besides Harvey and Finnegan. And hand up, I was wrong about Kyle Finnegan. He had a really good season. He's got a
He
really nice
did.
splitter, and I think that he's going to be important for next season.
Yeah, when he gets traded to the New York Yankees at the deadline.
potentially, he's still a trade candidate, and bullpen's hard to talk about as well because we know it's going to be totally different by this time next year because bullpen arms are so volatile. Like we know that Harvey and Finnegan will be here, but other than that, it could be any combination of guys. So overall they were probably I'd probably give them a D as well for both the starters and the bullpen because I thought the bullpen was going to be better. And then they weren't. So against my own expectations they were kind of not that great. So
Yeah.
a lot to work on there. What are your thoughts?
Slightly, I can't even really fully justify why, but like I'm slightly higher on the bullpen than I am the staff. And because I think for a majority of MLB teams, as long as you have three main components to a bullpen, the other 4 to 5 are going to shuffle constantly. You know, even in performance, even if it's the same guys, like their roles within the bullpen are going to shuffle, whether it be long reliever, fireman, cleanup, or, you know, second game of a doubleheader, we're getting blown out. Just please go, you know, get some outs. You know, like that's always going to change. But as long as the three main components are in place and are good at their jobs 80 to 90% of the time, like I think most MLB teams will take that. You know, so then I look at the Nats and I'm like, they kind of had that for a majority of the year. Like there was some bad performances for sure. And I wouldn't go to say they're top 10, top 15 bullpen, but I think they were fine. I think the back end of the bullpen was pretty good for the most part. And I'm with you. Like I didn't expect anything out of Kyle Finnegan, especially after how the year started, you know? So it's, I think I'm just trying not to be overly down on what was a good season from them. And to your point, like it's going to look incredibly different next year with bullpen, even if it's the same guys. Like it's bullpens are just so volatile. The one thing I will say is Kyle Finnegan's going to be 32. Like he was already on the older side. Like you don't know what you're going to get from him. He's not like really in the prime for pitchers anymore. Like he's in the prime for hitters, but even that's the tail end, you know. And Hunter Harvey like almost like just narrowly escaped another major arm injury again this year. So it's like that's treading on you know, thin ice. And then I was really high on Mason Thompson, who looked excellent at the start of the year, and then he crash and burn due to overuse
It's
and,
not his
you know,
fault.
kind of just other things that are out of his control, you know? So I think I'm just trying to be understanding of how bullpens work and how volatile they are. So I'm kind of in that C range as well, maybe like a C minus. So I'm a little bit higher than you, but I think Like, let's say the Nationals completely overhauled their lineup and got one starter. It won't happen, but for the sake of the argument, let's say we did. I think the bullpen's good enough to like sustain a playoff team, not a World Series contender, a playoff team. Like, think about it. The Marlins made the playoffs at 84 wins. You know, if I think the wins the Nats need to make the playoffs are going to come from other areas, not the bullpen, you know.
Yeah, that's fair. I would my only pushback would just be that we know that some of these guys are going to be back next year, regardless, in some kind of form or another. Like
Yeah.
guys like who the depth guys, you know, like Amos Willingham, for example, he's going to see innings probably.
I'm not sure he will though. Yeah, maybe, but I think
I'm
there's a
just
good shot he's
assuming that
gone.
all of these guys are going to eventually see innings at some point because that's
Oh,
just kind of how it
that's
works.
probably true.
But yeah, it's just. So yeah, I think also if you do sign a starter, you can actually bump a guy like Yoan
Trevor
Adone
Williams.
or
Trevor
Trevor Williams.
Williams.
Trevor Williams is
Trevor Williams.
or
He's a fine reliever. Spot starter. He's just not a starter.
we could DFA him and I would never be upset about it.
I'd be fine with
Also, the
that too.
Nationals don't know what the term swingman means, so there you go. He'll never be in the correct role here.
Yeah,
But
they hear swingman and it's like at the first pitch.
okay, that was pretty good, because and honestly, we can use that as a segue into our next and final segment, which is grading the front office and coaches, because I've got a couple issues with our approach at the plate and pitching, but especially at the plate, Darnell Coles. Okay, anyways, the offense was slightly better than it was last year overall, in terms of like WRC plus, just because there was more guys contributing a little bit in terms of actual production. But they could have done a lot better. And the super aggressive, like swing at the first pitch mentality works for some guys. You can't have that as a full team approach in 2023. It doesn't work. And the Nationals saw the fewest pitches per at bat of any team in 2023. That's not going to cut it. Walk rates have to go up. At least seeing more pitches. I mean, it's just there's so many games that I can think of where you have like a mediocre starter on the mound in the sixth inning at 60 pitches against the Nats because they just start swinging at everything. It's like they get into this hypnotized zone where all they can do is swing, especially in the middle innings. I mean, the amount of times where the Nats will score in the first inning and then just die until like the eighth inning is, I mean, too many to count this season. So there's definitely a lot that needs to be changed in the from the coaching side, and it's probably not going to happen, unfortunately.
Yeah, so I'll keep this brief because I've been pretty steadfast on this the entire season. Like Darnell Coles is terrible. Davey Martinez hires his friends, and like even the DC media will kind of tell you that. Whether they like openly admit it or not, they probably won't. But like if you read between the lines, they'll say that. The Darnell Coles approach is awful. It's something you teach your little leaguers. It doesn't work for major league team. Yeah, they didn't strike out a lot. That's because they had so much weak contact. So much weak contact playing to pitchers' pitches
Early in
and
counts too.
early
That's
in
my that's
counts.
even bigger problem.
The success CJ Abrams and like K'Bear Ruiz in stretches had went away from the Darnell Coles approach. Of hitting, being aggressive early in counts. Like Luis Garcia too, like he got better as he started laying off those early count pitches and getting pitches to hit later in counts, you know?
Ruiz's best stretch was when, sorry to cut you off, but Ruiz's best stretch was when he was walking the most and seeing the most pitches per at bat.
Right. So, and yeah, that goes to your point about walks. Like they didn't walk because they were swinging so much early in the count and getting those easy outs for pitchers. And it was just so incredible. It's like the most incredibly frustrating team to watch. And I'm sure there's going to be fans of other teams that say, well, hold on just a
Yeah.
second. But again, it's just not a sustainable approach. Like if you do that in certain games, sure, very viable. But like that being your organizational philosophy is just awful. Same goes for pitching. Like I kind of just touched on that already. Like the fact that it's just so old school, not incorporating any of the new data and analytics to help support your staff. And I'm not even saying they have to be like at the forefront of it. I'm just saying incorporate it. Like there is a blend of old school, new school thought that like, you know, can create this like harmonious balance with the staff, but they're like so stubborn, they won't even use it. And then I get people replying to me like, they're like, oh, well, Hickey and Coles don't matter because they're not even the ones dictating organizational philosophy. That comes from the coach and GM. And my response to that is, you're so close to getting it. You're so close to understanding it. Like, you're so close.
Yeah,
Like,
like we know
just get a
that.
little bit further and you'll see, you know, you'll see the light, my friend.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it, but I'm not going to spend too much time on Martinez and Rizzo because they're going to be here. They were already extended. They both need to be better at their jobs. Like they both do. Whether it's fully in their hands with the ownership situation, I don't know. But I can tell you for a fact they both need to be better at their jobs. And I can tell you also for a fact that Darnell Coles and Jim Hickey are terrible at their positions. There's a reason they were out of baseball for several years before the Nats picked them up. And there's a reason the Nats picked them up. It's because Davey Martinez is friends with them, not because they were the best. Best suited candidates for the job. So that's where I'm at. And that's why I'm so hesitant on like putting too much stock into these young guys because I'm afraid we don't have the coaches in place to really support them.
And, you know, I think it's pretty obvious that the Nationals overperformed in one-run ball games, and those are
That's
the
not
things,
sustainable. Look at
those are
the
the things
Vikings
that will
this year if you need a
regress.
comp.
Yes, those are the that's the type of thing that will regress if you don't address the problem. And the main problem is on the coaching staff is Hickey and Coles, and so that they've got to go. But it's probably not going to happen. But we can hope. So I think overall, I have to give them probably like a neutral grade, like a C, because they did get 71 wins, and I didn't see that coming. I was more optimistic, and I had us at 64. So,
I was even lower. I had him at 59.
yeah. So I have to give them credit for that, but there's a lot of regression to the mean that could happen if they don't address the problems. Like, they can't just take this and say, oh, look, we're improving and we're going to be even better next year, because they got to continue to add to get better next year.
Yep. Agreed. I'm at C minus.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, all right, you'll like this. C minus 71. 71%. That's
There
where
you go. There you go.
I'm at. So yeah, there's stuff that needs to be better. Like fifth most runs allowed in baseball. That's not going to get you anywhere. They need to drop that by like 100. And that's not easy to do. You know, and I haven't looked at the offensive in terms of runs scored, but they only scored 700 runs, which just a quick glance is only higher than two or three other NL teams.
Yeah, poor
So
run
like the,
differential.
yeah, really poor run differential. So a lot of work to be done, but there's promise.
Yeah,
It's just
it can happen. They just have to go out and do it in off season
the thing is
and get
like
these guys.
it can also go the other way, like poorly.
Yeah,
Like
that's
we could
my.
drop back down to like 63 wins.
Yeah, that's
That's a reality.
the regression aspect
Yeah.
is it's a little scary.
Yeah. So, yeah, a little bit more Nats talk for you on this episode. We wanted to obviously recap the season and spend a little bit more time on it. Because obviously for the next couple of weeks, we'll be all in on MLB playoffs, as you saw in our last episode. And you will see in our next few episodes, as we recap the playoffs and talk World Series when that time comes and whatnot. And then once the season's over, we'll shift back into a more 50-50 split, talk Nats and offseason plans, what we want to see from them, free agent targets and whatnot. And then obviously, you know, the hot stove with any moves going around baseball, where Shohei Ohtani lands, all that good stuff. So we wanted to
Eventually
take the
player
time.
rankings again, because we
Yeah.
always do
And player
those.
rankings again, always a fun time of the
Very, very
year.
fun.
Yeah, so we'll get into all that. You know, there's plenty of content coming your way in the off season, but yeah, we just want to talk a little bit more Nats this episode and you know, hopefully manifest some change, some positive change in the off season. But Trey, you got any other final thoughts before we head out?
You know, basically. It's a lot of, there's so many thoughts about this team going through my head.
Yeah,
I
I could
guess
have gone for another hour.
Yeah, I mean it actually is crazy how much that we didn't even get to talk about, but I think we can take this as a positive season, and but we gotta hold people accountable in the organization. Okay, the team has proved that they can go out and win 71 games. So you gotta buy back into them because they provided for you. So just continue to stay diligent with paying attention to that. Don't believe like everything that they're selling you, because sometimes the learners are not as interested in winning baseball games as they might say they are. So
They're
just
not.
keep that in mind. But I don't want to be too doomer mode, because there was definitely a lot of positivity, excuse me.
Yeah, what was
I don't know.
that?
I just pronounced it very strange. Anyways, I'll stop rambling. We can end the episode.
Yeah. All right. Appreciate you guys tuning in. If you're listening to the podcast, be sure to check us out on YouTube at District Baseball. Like, subscribe, review. And if you're checking us out on YouTube, we appreciate you. Be sure to make sure you're subscribed to everything. Leave comments with your thoughts. Follow us on Twitter. Our handles are below. And go throw us a like, a follow, whatever on the podcast platform. So we greatly appreciate it. We will be back next week talking playoffs and anything else that might be going on. But appreciate listening. Peace.